While we were in the Northwest last August, we were in Du Bois, Wyoming, with the Whitefields. And I was looking through the museum there in Du Bois. It's quite a museum. And they have a remarkable collection of barbed wire. I never, you know, even though I grew up in the Southwest, you know, barbed wire was barbed wire. I didn't know there was a difference. But there are tens of thousands of different types of barbed wire. Did you know that? And so I was looking through the collection that they have in the museum there, and I was reading as I went and learned that barbed wire played a very, very significant role in the settling of the West. In fact, perhaps just as important as the windmill, the Colt revolver, and the Winchester rifle. I was thinking of that and how that correlates with the role that the Roman road played in the first century in helping to spread the gospel. What the barbed wire was to the settling of our country, the Roman roads were to the spread of the gospel in the first century. Now, there were a lot of other factors involved. There was a very prosperous time. There was the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. There were a number of other factors, but nothing quite as significant as the Roman road, sociologically speaking at least. Last night I was reading in a book on backgrounds to the New Testament and learned that there were 53,000 miles of Roman roads in the Roman Empire. That's a lot of cobblestone. And so the Roman road just helped with the spread of the gospel, and that's reflected in the book of Acts, of course. The Roman road allowed for mobility, and Roman society in the first century was very mobile. And again, the book of Acts reflects that. As Paul went about establishing churches, you know that he established churches along trade routes, along the freeways of his day, especially the Via Ignatia. There were a number of cities, important cities, and in along the way, and he established churches in each one of those. And then as you start looking through the New Testament, for this idea of mobility and looking for the way in which people traveled, some things suddenly start emerging. For example, I just wrote down three examples here. In Philippi, Paul met a lady named Lydia who was a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira. And here she was in northern Greece with her wares. Aquila and Priscilla are very well known to us. And in Acts chapter 16, or rather 18, Acts chapter 18, we pick up on their story, and we find that this couple moved around a lot just in the brief time that Paul knew them, 10 or 15 years. They moved to five or six cities. In Acts chapter 18, verse 2, it says that there in Corinth, Paul met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus. So they grew up in Pontus, or he did at least, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. You see? So they started in Pontus, then they moved to Rome, now they're in Corinth, and in verse 19 of that same chapter, Luke tells us that they arrived at Ephesus. They went with Paul to Ephesus and helped with the church there. And then if you read on over in Romans chapter 16, we find them back in Rome again. Romans 16 and verse 3, Paul says, I want you to greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus. They risked their lives for me. Not only I, but all the churches of the Gentiles are grateful to them. And then maybe the most dramatic illustration of the mobility of the early Christians comes from this same chapter in Romans 16. I want you to notice as I read these people, and I'm going to stumble around, I'm You know, I'm about as reluctant to read this list of people here as one would be to read a commencement list. You know how you always mispronounce and stumble on the names. But I want to read these 26 people's names so that you have an impact, so it impacts your thinking. These are people that Paul met in his ministry in other places around the eastern shores of the Mediterranean, who had found their way, all of them had found their way back to Rome. But they didn't start there. He says, I want you to greet, verse 3, Priscilla and Aquila. Greet also the church that meets at their house. There's hospitality, by the way. Greet my dear friend Epaphroditus. He was the first convert to Christ in the province of Asia. Greet Mary, who worked very hard for you. Greet Andronicus and Junius, my relatives who have been in prison with me. They are outstanding among the apostles, and they were in Christ before I was. Greet Ampliatus, whom I love in the Lord. Greet Urbanus, our fellow worker in Christ, and my dear friend Stachys. Greet Apelles, tested and approved in Christ. Greet those who belong to the household of Aristobulus. Greet Herodian, my relative. Greet those in the household of Narcissus who are in the Lord. Greet Tryphenia and Tryphosa, those women who work hard in the Lord. Greet my dear friend Persis, another woman who has worked very hard in the Lord. Greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother, who has been a mother to me also. Greet I'm not even going to try that. Okay, you got it. And how about that next one? Phlegon, Hermes, Patrobus, Hermas, and the brothers with them. Greet Philologus, Julia, Nerus, and his sister Olympus, and all the saints with them. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, I knew I'd have trouble with those names, but I wanted to read them anyway because these are... Bear in mind that Paul wrote this letter to a church that he had never met and telling them that he was anxious to meet them for the first time and hoping that they then would assist him in going on to Spain. And yet, even though he had never met that church, he knows 26 of them by name already because he had met them in his ministry around the Mediterranean. That's how mobile the first century was. Now, along with that mobility then came the need for provisions, for lodging. And where do you suppose people went for lodging? You know, today we have institutionalized forms of hospitality. Howard Johnson's, the Sheraton, the Hilton, Omni, you name it. And back in the first century, they also had institutionalized forms of hospitality. There was quite a system of inns. In fact, in a number of places, inns would be built along these highways at 8-mile intervals. And not like today where they're all bunched up, but they would be built 8 miles along the road. The idea being that 16 miles was a typical day's travel, and so there was always an inn. But whenever possible, discriminating travelers would avoid these inns because they had bad reputations, both quality and in terms of morality. Oftentimes, thieves would lie in wait for guests. Many times, the innkeepers were extortioners of money. And then they were rodent, insect infected. They just were unclean, unsafe places. And then they were well known for their immorality. Some inns were just simply brothels. And so discriminating travels would avail themselves whenever possible of the hospitality of business associates or other acquaintances. They would go the private hospitality route. And Jews and Christians particularly who had a high value ethical system often relied on other people and associates to help in their lodging. And so we find that again reflected in the New Testament. Now, none of this I know is really new to us. I'm just wanting to remind us of what Christian hospitality was like in the first century as a background maybe for what we should be doing. In the book of Luke, he, more than any of the other evangelists, picks up on Jesus and his dealings with people at mealtime or spending the night or whatever. He seems to emphasize this idea of hospitality. In Luke chapter 14, he has Jesus in the home of one of the Pharisees who is being hospitable to him. And on that occasion, Jesus takes advantage to give further instruction about hospitality. In Luke 14 and verse 7, Jesus said, when he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. And if so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this man your seat. And then humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you will be honored in the presence of all your fellow guests. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and everyone who humbles himself will be exalted. And then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they will invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. That's just an example of Jesus' teaching on hospitality. And it seems that for Luke, hospitality was more than just meeting a practical need. It carried a sense of welcome. It carried a sense of acceptance. It was a concrete way of showing one's love for another. And so it has a lot of theological significance. It's much more than just a meal. It's much more than just another place for someone to sleep. That's why Paul was so concerned when Peter did not show the Gentiles table fellowship, you see. It was much more than just a meal. He was saying something else behind that act. He was saying, you know, I'm not really sure whether these guys are my brothers or not. And for Luke, that was a big concern. It was a concern of other writers as well. I want you to notice in Romans chapter 12, when Paul gives some instruction about love, again, he mentions hospitality as a concrete way of showing brotherly love. Love is not just something that's abstract, theoretical. It's something that really boils down to practical things such as having people over for a meal. Romans chapter 9 and verse 12. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. And then again over in Hebrews chapter 13, I think it's verse 2, the writer here says, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. And then look over in 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter 4 and verse 8. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins. Now, how do you do that? Well, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. That's how you do that. Now, I'm just wanting to show you some passages. We're not going to be in any way exhaustive with this subject. But there's plenty of commands in the New Testament to love the brethren and to love strangers. And along with that is just this exhortation to offer hospitality, to show hospitality. It seems that in the first century, traveling Christians assumed that they would be received by their brethren and taken care of wherever they went. If we could go back to Acts again and the 21st chapter, I think this shows it very well. Paul was on his way to Jerusalem, still encouraging the brethren along the way. And in verse 1, he said, "After we had torn ourselves away from them, we put out to sea and sailed straight for Kos. And the next day we went to Rhodes, and then from there to Patara. And we found a ship crossing over to Phoenicia. We went on board and set sail. After sighting Cyprus and passing to the south of it, we sailed on to Syria. We landed at Tyre, where our ship was to unload its cargo." Verse 4, "Finding the disciples there, we stayed with them 7 days." Now, you don't notice this, or at least I didn't, just reading, but once you are sensitized to it, and you go back and read through the Gospels and the book of Acts, or any of the letters, you begin picking this stuff out. "He stayed set with these disciples 7 days. Now, verse 7, "We continued our voyage from Tyre and landed at Ptolemais or something like that, and where we greeted the brothers, and we stayed with them for a day. And leaving the next day, we reached Caesarea and stayed at the house of Philip." And then look on in verse 16. "Some of the disciples from Caesarea accompanied us and brought us to the house of Mnason, where we were to stay." Now that's just in one chapter. In Philippians or Philemon, 22, Paul encourages Philemon to prepare a guest house for himself. This was just an accepted way of showing brotherly love. And Paul not only expected or asked that of himself, he asked that of his co-workers as well. If you'll look in 1 Corinthians 15. Let's see, I'm sorry, 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 6. This is again, I guess this is Paul here. Paul is writing to the Corinthians and he says, "After I go through Macedonia, I will come to you, for I will be going through Macedonia. Perhaps I will stay with you a while, or even spend the winter so that you can help me on my journey wherever I go." Christian hospitality not only involved keeping guests, but it also involved helping to send especially Christian missionaries on their way to wherever else they were to go. In Romans chapter 15, and let's see, verse 23, Paul is writing to another church, the Roman church, and he has this to say, "But now that there is no more room for me to work in these regions, and since I have been longing for many years to see you, I plan to do so when I go to Spain. I hope to visit you while passing through and to have you assist me on my journey there after I have enjoyed your company for a while." The expression, I hope that you would speed me on my journey, that's a technical expression. Whenever you see that in the New Testament, that's a technical expression for giving me aid, either financially or emotionally or traveling with me. But that was quite often practiced by the early church. They would receive guests and they would help them on their way. And then, as I said, Paul claimed this privilege for others as well. I'm not going to spend time looking at all of these passages. You might want to jot them down for your own study. In 1 Corinthians 16:11, and in Philippians 2:29, Paul writes ahead of friends asking the churches to put them up when they get there. And one passage that we will look at is in Titus chapter 3. And verse 13, here he says, "Do everything that you can help, do everything you can to help Zenas, the lawyer, and Apollos on their way, and see that they have everything they need. Our people must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good, in order that they may provide for daily necessities and not live unproductive lives." So hospitality, I hope that you see from the New Testament, was a virtue In fact, it was just a virtue in antiquity. It was a virtue among non-believing people. It was a necessity. But especially among Christians, it was a virtue. And I also want you to see that hospitality was one way that people involved themselves in the preaching of the gospel, as they would keep people in their home and help them on their way. That was one way of sharing in their preaching of the gospel. And then, as we know, quite often people's homes became the basis of operation and a meeting place for the local church. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but Luke follows Paul on his missionary journeys. And Luke is particularly interested in Paul's mission to the Jews. And so he doesn't say a lot about Paul's mission to the Gentiles, which that's interesting, isn't it? Because Paul's mission to the Gentiles was his major thrust. But in places like Acts 18, we can read a little bit between the line and see where Paul went after he left synagogues. You see, Paul didn't spend all of his time in the synagogue. He spent most of his time trying to preach the good news to Gentiles. Well, where did he go? Notice in Acts 18, after this, Paul left Athens and he went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus. We read that earlier. And when Silas and Timothy came to Macedonia, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. But when the Jews opposed Paul and became abusive, he shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, "Your blood be on your heads. I am clear of my responsibility. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." Then Paul left the synagogue and went next door to the house of Titus Justus, a worshiper of God. Crispus, the synagogue ruler, and his entire household believed in the Lord, and many of the Corinthians who heard him believed and were baptized. Now, there's not a lot there, but if you start looking for it, you just trace Paul's missionary journeys next time you're in Acts, and notice that he goes first to the synagogue, and then quite often he would move his base of operation to a home. And so people would open up their homes. And through that hospitality, they would then encourage Paul to continue with his preaching. And in fact, they often opened their homes to churches. I found it interesting that the earliest archaeological evidence that we have of a church building comes from around the year 250 A.D. And that was a converted house. Now, we're not, I hope you hear, I'm not up here advocating house churches and not meeting in church buildings or what have you. What I'm really hoping that we're getting the handle on is Christian hospitality. That was a virtue. That it was commanded of the early Christians and it was practiced among them. And that was a way, an avenue of preaching the gospel. And I think today that the home provides a very natural setting for the spread of the gospel. That it's the most conducive avenue that we have in reaching out to our neighbors and to our business associates or whoever with the good news. And so I want to encourage us even more than what we have been doing to practice that hospitality. And as I close, I want us to keep in mind that hospitality is different from entertainment. I like this little quote out of Gail McDonald's book, I think it is. She says, "Hospitality is a safe place. Entertainment is a show place. Hospitality focuses on people. Entertainment focuses on things. Hospitality creates an open atmosphere. Entertainment can be neat and closed. Hospitality exudes a warm attitude. Entertainment can degenerate to being cool and calculated. Hospitality puts one at ease. Entertainment implies competition. Hospitality is a harborous disposition. Entertainment sets up a win or lose attitude in which one is closed off to dust, dirt, and people. Hospitality involves making people feel good in God's world. God created a hospitable world. Sin made the world inhospitable. But by our supportive action, we can dispel the sinful atmosphere. And I think in that same book, she related how the times that she's been most honored have not been the times when she's been invited for a full formal dinner with the best of linen and china, though that's nice and has a place. She said the time that she's been most honored is when people would invite her over just to eat off the kitchen table with the, Marillac or what's it called? That plastic, not Marillac, what am I thinking of? Melmanac, yes. That somehow, you know, if people were at ease enough and felt that she was enough of a family to let her eat off of the kitchen table, then that spoke more to her than the dining room table. I say that because, you know, when we get to thinking of hospitality, we often think that we got to bring out the best and put on the best, and I don't want us to think in those terms. In fact, there was a friend of mine who went over to, who lives in New York City, and they were invited over to another family's house. It was a housewarming. They had just moved from one house in Queens to another. They were very excited about the move because they had some additional bedroom space, and they had a park, as they called it, or at least as the kids called it, that they could play in. Earlier, they could only play in the street. Now they had this park, a yard, that they could play in. And so they went over and discovered that this park, this yard that they were bragging about and excited about, was only like 4 by 6 feet. You could hardly even stand in it, much less play. And then they went on in, and the house was built in such a way that you had to walk through one room to get to the next, and you had to literally walk through 3 or 4 bedrooms to get to the kitchen. And this was just so different to where they were living on Park Avenue, you know, in a nice condominium. And she got into the car and began to explaining to my friend how uncomfortable she was there, and how she just felt so bad about them, and she wanted to honor them and be excited because they were excited, but she just felt bad, and she felt really bad about going back to her condominium on Park Avenue. And my friend said, you know, you're wrong in that attitude. That's just showing some prejudice in your heart, that someone would have to come up to your level, or you would have to go down to their level, socially, economically speaking, for you to be comfortable, for you to accept them. That's not the gospel. The gospel of God cuts through dividing walls, racial walls, economic walls, social walls, barriers, and it makes us all one. And he said to her, "You should develop a Christian attitude and become more comfortable sharing in that and honoring them and being excited for them. That's good for them. And then you should not be embarrassed about going back to where you live either. Not if you've got a true grasp on things and on your life. You should be able to welcome them in your home without having to hide all these things." She said, you know, if I had them over in my house, I'd feel compelled to put a lot of stuff away in the closet. Well, that's the wrong attitude too. And they should be able to come to your home and be comfortable and affirm all that you have without being envious of it. You know? Because that's what the gospel's all about. Well, I hope there's some stuff there. I don't know how much time we've got, 5 or 10 minutes maybe. I'd like some feedback from you, and I'd like for you to share some specific ways that you have opened your house this past year. And we'll start maybe with meals, but you know, there's a lot more ways to being hospitable than just having meals. And so let's, yes.